This is a special edition of The Naked Scientists with me, Meera Senthi Lingam, as this week we're exploring the science and technology behind cycling as we venture out to the Tour de France. And still to come, we meet world-class sprinter Tyler Farrer. But first, we've had an insight into the role engineering can play in producing faster, stronger bikes. But what about the strength and speed of the person on the bike, the cyclist? Cyclists on the Tour de France cover between 150 and 200 kilometres every day for 3 weeks, with only 2 rest days in between. This requires an extreme level of stamina and endurance. So to find out how the physiology required to meet this endurance level can be monitored and improved upon, when I got back, I met sports physiologists Fergal Grace and Adrian Elliott in their sports science lab at Kingston University, and took naked scientist Julia Graham along for some testing.
Well, first of all, for a cyclist, we're looking at their aerobic fitness, which is key to being a top-quality performance cyclist. Other things we'll look at are muscle power. You'll have two different types of cyclists. You'll have the climbers and you'll have some and the sprinters. Now, they've got fundamentally different muscle fibre types. Okay, so the sprinters have got can generate a lot of power very quickly. Climbers have got a sustained, controlled release of power.
So we're currently in your lab here at Kingston at the moment, where naked scientist Julia Graham is currently undergoing a VO2 max test. So this is obviously monitoring oxygen. So what does this test involve with regards to oxygen uptake?
We know how much oxygen is in the atmosphere. Okay, and if we can measure accurately expired ventilation, which is when somebody breathes out during exercise, the difference between the atmospheric air and the air that's expired out is being consumed by the body. Now, the more aerobically fit somebody is, the more oxygen they can utilise per kilo of body mass. Okay, and that's fundamentally what this test measures.
Now, Adrian, Julia is currently on a Velotron, which is an indoor bike. She's wired up to all sorts of computers. You're the one here testing her and monitoring her. So what are you actually looking at now when she's on this?
At the moment, we can see the amount of oxygen that Julia is consuming per minute. We can see that relative to her body mass, which gives us a good indication and allows us to compare Julia's values to those achieved by individuals of other sizes, whether they be elite athletes or cardiovascular patients.
And what are the measurements at the moment then?
At the moment, we see VO2, so which is oxygen consumed, at roughly about 30 millilitres per kilogram of Julia's body mass per minute. We'd expect that to rise in a healthy sedentary individual to values in perhaps the 40s. The more trained an individual becomes and perhaps the more genetically predisposed towards aerobic exercise they are, we should see values in excess of 60, 70, perhaps even 80 millilitres per kilogram per minute.
And how much can someone then train to actually, say, what, almost double that then?
Well, they can participate in prolonged aerobic exercise. Perhaps an elite endurance athlete would be training perhaps 2, 3, 4 hours a day, trying to look at using the heart and lungs to bring in oxygen and encourage the muscle cells to actively use that oxygen.
And how useful would you say then this test is then for pro cyclists to kind of be aware of their VO2 max?
It's very useful. It allows them to see their total capacity, so aerobic capacity, the maximum amount of oxygen they can use at sea level at the moment. What we can also see from the data we're getting in this test is something called anaerobic threshold, which will tell us the intensity at which an individual can sustain exercise for extended periods of time in excess of perhaps 20, 30 minutes.
I guess that is crucial, because at the moment, what, Julia will be on this bike for about 10 minutes, say, and she's not always, if she was to go for hours, going to be at the same peak performance, is she?
No, absolutely not. I mean, the values that she achieves at the high-intensity stages wouldn't be sustainable for a long period of time. Perhaps what becomes more interesting is the more we can look at Julia, the more we can see what kind of exercise level she can sustain. So she may keep the same total capacity, but if she can train to the point where she can work at a higher intensity, so a higher percentage of that aerobic capacity, then that will come with benefits in terms of performance times and perhaps placings in an event.
Now, Julia, you've been going for 13 minutes on this test. How are you feeling?
I'm pretty out of breath.
How's the resistance been, or how's it generally felt throughout, though?
Well, it goes up each time, so by the end it was really tough, and I'm pretty knackered.
But initially, so when you first started out, were you okay at a steady pace?
Yeah, initially it was really easy, and I thought, I can do this really easily. And then it gets much harder as you go along. Pretty knackered.
Well, Adrian, what are Julia's results then now?
Julia reached a VO2 max. That's a maximum oxygen consumed of 45 millilitres per kilogram per minute. So it's in the range that we would associate with an active, sedentary, but healthy individual. If Julia were to now engage in some aerobic training, perhaps train for a long event, we'd anticipate that her VO2 would rise up into the 50s. Perhaps 55 would be a target, a realistic target for Julia at this stage.
So well done, Julia.
Thanks very much. Yeah.
Now, Fergal, what's actually going on inside someone's body then to affect this capacity and this uptake?
If we look at this, you know, just from the outside, it looks like it's very much breathing or respiratory based or based around your lungs. In actual fact, the major changes that are happening are with the heart. The heart is going to become more elastic, going to fill with more blood, and it's going to pump that blood around the body. Now, what happens with an endurance training program is that the chambers inside the heart become larger. And in doing so, they're able to hold more blood, and when it contracts, able to force more blood around the body so that the body becomes more efficient at pumping oxygenated blood around the body.
What are other tests then that you also perform in the lab to assess other factors as well as VO2 max?
Yeah, some of the factors we'd look at would be metabolic, and the one that immediately springs to mind is a lactate threshold test, whereby another incremental test is done on a number of occasions, and lactate samples are taken at the end of each stage. Lactate is a toxic metabolite in the body, you know, formed from the breakdown of carbohydrate. When it builds up in the muscles, it creates fatigue. Once somebody becomes more efficient at exercise, you can delay the onset of that accumulation of lactate. That's why cyclists would be interested in coming into a lab, having a lactate profile test done, and on the basis of that, they can work out how hard they're going to exercise during their training sessions. So they're going to want to exercise on or about their lactate threshold. So that is the point at which you're exercising at approximately 70 to 75% of your maximum ability, and the lactate starts to appear in the bloodstream.
A last factor then, Adrian, is the fact that a lot of cyclists also, as well as monitoring their oxygen uptake, also look at how much power they're actually producing when they're cycling.
Yes, well, we've measured power here. Julia reached a value of 170 watts, which equates to around about 3 watts per kilogram for body mass. In cycling, power to weight ratio is the key for most of the performance. In a pro cyclist, for instance, in the stage on the Col de Tourmalet, leaders were reaching values reported to be just under 6 watts per kilogram, which is an extraordinary amount, even for most trained individuals. We rarely see values such as that, and they're sustaining those levels over an extended period of time, perhaps 30, 40 minutes for the duration of a climb.
How would you summarise, then, the key kind of factors that are crucial to someone coming in and knowing what they need to make them a good pro cyclist?
Okay, well, if we were to prioritise, we'd look at, as we've done today, aerobic capacity, anaerobic threshold. We'd also be very interested in the efficiency of an individual, so perhaps looking at their oxygen consumed per unit of work or how much of the energy they produce goes into actually moving forward, keeping a low body mass and a low upper body surface area. Together, those factors are probably the major determinants of cycling performance, particularly at the professional level.
So although many of us could train to improve our endurance, there are a rare group of humans out there that are actually able to perform at the levels that the pro cyclists do. So it comes down to genetics in the end. That was Adrian Elliott and Fergal Grace from the School of Sports and Exercise Science at Kingston University.